Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Tried Behavioral Health, covering trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and our topic today is fighting racism with inner work. I'm joined today by Brandon Johnson. Brandon is a public health practitioner and has worked in the field of mental health and suicide prevention for the past 7 years, and is an advocate for Black and minority mental health. Brandon has spoken with us in a previous episode on oppression and race, and we are so excited to welcome him back today to speak on an important topic of fighting racism with personal awareness and inner work. Brandon, welcome back to Behavior Health Today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
It is really nice to have you. Hey, let's just start out by setting a cornerstone for our conversation today. Let's just start with, as we're talking about racism and as we move slowly into kind of beginning to do that inner work that you're encouraging of us, let's just start by defining racism. Start us out there, please.
Sure. So racism is the ability for a group of people who we classify in the majority to discriminate against any group of people based on their race or ethnicity. So racism has looked different throughout centuries, but that's the cornerstone of what racism is.
Very good. And as we're talking about defining it here, let's talk about ways that we might be able to recognize it. How do we see this come up in our day-to-day that we may not be as aware of as we could be, that it's actually around us and occurring?
Absolutely. So there are so many different ways that racism shows up in our day-to-day lives. And so oftentimes when we talk about racism, people tend to think about the, you know, larger acts of racism, such as physical hate crimes and discriminatory messages, you know, left in public places. But racism has so many different looks to it. And one of the ones we talk about a lot is around microaggressions and micro invalidations. So really what we're talking about there is how racism comes up in smaller ways. And so as we look in people being passed over for advancements in employment opportunities, individuals being thought of as less than in different spaces, and individuals being, you know, not seen as equal in other senses. And so in terms of, it comes out a lot in schooling and in their expectations for individuals' advancement in different arenas.
Really good. We can't help but recognize and know that there are effects of racism on people of color, ethnicity, other identifying factors, but it has an effect on people, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
What do you see being some of the takeaway effects of the people you work with or people that come to share things with you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is centered around one, there are some depressive symptoms that may arise in individuals who experience high levels of racism and discrimination, and just feeling this feeling of hopelessness that it's not going to go away, that it's ever present, and it's going to create issues in various sectors of their lives. There's also anxiety that comes up in wanting to avoid spaces that, you know, bring about those feelings of racism. So whether it be on the job, whether it be in various public spaces, some people want to avoid it. Like they don't want to be around it. And it can also be quite frustrating, that to the point that, you know, we've seen it for some people that they lose sleep over it. And so that their sleep is impacted, which has a myriad of issues that people deal with consequently throughout the day.
You know what I appreciate about that? Even though we're talking about ways to do one's internal work, you're speaking to those right now that are on the receiving end of this. And oftentimes, whether they've been around it for a long period of time, or some of these things might be a little bit more subtle. I'm avoiding some place, I'm having trouble sleeping, I'm feeling a little down, a little anxious. They may not naturally recognize that this is secondary to the way that they may be treated, or they're experiencing people respond to them or look at them, et cetera. So it's a nice piece you're talking about right now, Brandon, that says, hey, if you're experiencing some of these symptoms or some of these takeaways that you're describing, are there areas of your life where you may be experiencing something discriminatory, something that's really challenging for you to hold? And maybe we can make that more conscious and aware. Let me come into just kind of the, on the other side where you're encouraging us in this podcast today to do that inner work. And we know that our own mental biases, and we all have them, mm-hmm. Our mental biases can perpetuate our racism. Sometimes we're not even aware of what they are. They might even be things like that you have referred to before as detours. And these detours are ways that we might think and believe, but they could be very impactful of how we are maybe knowingly, unknowingly, organizing the way that we look at something.
Right.
Make some of the unconscious conscious around this for us. What are some ways that we might think that refer to around these detours?
Absolutely. So one in which that I can talk about is kind of this bootstrap theory around really this idea that now that we've had certain laws enacted, certain things have changed in society, that everybody is on an even playing field, that right. anybody who wants to achieve the highest of the highest, especially in our country, is able to do that without any hindrance or anything blocking them, which is not true and kind of takes away from the reality of decades and centuries of mistreatment and policies that have been preventative and
right.
discriminatory practices that have led to mass incarcerations and criminalizing individuals for things that now are legal and encouraged. And so many policies, you know, I talk a lot about redlining and what that meant for housing and finances in various communities, especially African-American and Latinx communities, to the point that there's some studies that show that hundreds and thousands of dollars have been pulled from individual families as a result of that. And so it isn't, you know, quite that simple as a level playing field. There are traumas and things that have had impact there as well. So it's not that cut and dry.
There's one piece for the equality piece, being given equal opportunity. That's key. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't guarantee that there's going to be equity in people's right. opportunities presented to them to be able to reach the levels that they've got the potential to be reaching. So equality is one thing, the equity piece is the other thing. So we talk about the bootstrap theory and we're thinking about, well, shouldn't you just be able to pull yourself up by the bootstraps? But you're saying that they're ignoring the inequalities mm-hmm. that really do impact and have an impact on the oppression, the privileges that some may not be able to be starting out with.
Right. It really does. And so, and those things are still ever prevalent. When we talk about employment rates and how people are seen, you know, there's so many things that impact people to get proper employment and be able to, you know, reach those heights. There are still barriers there. There is still systemic racism that exists and biases that exist. And we'll, you know, talk more about those biases because there's inner work to address those. But having those biases can prevent a person who has the ability, has the potential, has the skills and experience to excel, but just can't get there because of some of these barriers.
What I'm liking about your encouragement here is that we all carry these biases, and I want to shift to that. That's really the focus here around our own inner work and making, if you will, the unconscious conscious around those thoughts, behaviors, biases, belief systems that we have, each one of us, that can influence negatively people being given equal opportunities, equity being considered here. And let's talk about some shifting gears and focusing on that inner work and ways that you're encouraging us to take a look at what are we carrying? How do we know what we're doing and how that might be influencing our interactions with those that might be detrimental in some ways?
Absolutely. So it really takes honest conversation and introspection and kind of peeling back our own layers and experiences. You know, when we talk about biases and we talk about some of these things that we harbor, they don't naturally just occur, right? Like there are experiences and things, interactions that we've had, learning that has taken place even from young children that we have to unpack and figure out, why do we feel, you know, yeah. these things and why do we feel this type of way? So it really starts with some good introspection. And when we talk mm-hmm. about anti-racism training, that's one of the key cornerstones of it, right? Is unpacking how we have these things and what they may look like and how they show themselves in our own behavior. And it really starts with unpacking that for ourselves. And also it takes a lot of listening to individuals who have experienced these things. I think that's another critical cornerstone of anti-racism training is thinking through and learning from other individuals it's very easy for us to be locked in and have tunnel vision with our own experiences because they are valid. They're ours. They're what we have.
You're at risk for almost a group think if it's just by yourself and you're looking at your own navel. It's what if we make ourselves uncomfortable? And what if we sit with those who have gone through it, regardless of your race, color, whatever the situation may be? What if I expose myself to those outside of myself? And I like what you're starting with is I've got to ask myself, what is my own personal narrative? What's my family's belief? What are maybe even within my family, the intergenerational beliefs?
Absolutely.
And not looking to do anything other than understand the impact and the takeaway that I have, that I carry, that might organize my life and my view of other people. And now you're saying, as I become more aware of that, what if I become more aware of the lives of those going through some of these things to really begin to shade in a greater appreciation for their experience? Talk a bit more about that part for me, exposing ourselves to others and allowing ourselves to be uncomfortable enough to listen openly and to trust their experiences.
Yeah, I think it starts with being able to listen to learn and to get information, because so often we listen to find a rebuttal or to be combative or to, you know, start a debate with someone. And so, you know, listening for, you know, non-judgmentally taking in the information and processing it through your own experiences of how this impacts, you know, and kind of breaks down what you've been learned. And the thing that you mentioned there that's so key is being able to listen and be able to process it and be able to, you know, really start to break down those things that you've believed, that you've thought, that you've understood to be true, and be able to take that other perspective and really to apply it to your own behavior.
You know, if we could take that, that's very, very well put. That's what makes change so hard. Whether you're trying in a marriage to make room for your spouse's opinion or their perspective, and you're saying, yeah, no, it's this is the way that it is. And it's not so much that we want to be controlling, but a lot of times it's based in fear, because my whole reality, my whole security system, my whole way of knowing how to be in the world, whether it's to be safe, predictable, otherwise, is dependent upon how I see these things and how I organize it in my own schemata or my own model, whatever we want to call it, but my own internal psychic view of how the world works. And each one of us has this same model, this schemata, and we're all walking around with it, most of us unconsciously. And what you're talking about, again, not to belabor this term, but you're making the unconscious conscious. And what you're saying is, if you can have the courage to show up and listen to another person and entertain, suspend all disbelief about what's getting kicked up for you. And rather than get defensive, because if we're getting defensive, we're getting afraid more times than not. And if we can just breathe and self-soothe and make room for the other person's experiences, we might find ourselves expanding into a greater shared appreciation for and understanding of what's going on around us and in the lives around us. And that's when you're saying, if we can expand that inner work, here's where we get to expand with one another and maybe come at these things in a healthier way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that comes up a lot when people are in these, you know, engaged with this is that, you know, if they're not in that position to listen and understand, they'll nullify or kind of disregard what people are saying because they haven't seen it. They'll say, I haven't experienced it. And since I haven't seen it, it may not exist.
It can't be real. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right. I was going to say that when you said it, it's based in, it's a scary thing to do. It's tough when you built this and you fortified your beliefs over years. You start this as a young child in child development. Yes. We know this. And so as this gets built, to start to take down the bricks of that fort that you build is a scary thing to do, but it also helps the people outside of your fort who have a different looking fort, who isn't as fortified and have different experiences, for us to be able to see each other better.
Yeah, you know, Brandon, one of the things I really like about you, and you struck me very clearly with this in our first conversation, is that you're inviting conversations. You're not inviting judgment, even for those that hold biased or racist beliefs. And that takes a huge holding capacity for those that have gone through some of these things to listen to somebody who naively, ignorantly or reactively is saying, yeah, but you got to be able to pull up yourself by your bootstraps, or, you know what, it doesn't happen in my world, therefore it can't be real. That is very triggering.
Yes.
And it takes a lot of emotional muscle and sophistication and a larger view of really what's going on to gently nudge somebody to say, well, let's take a look at that. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of mine down into that. Would you be able to hold and just make room for someone else's experience and try and get in to an empathic attunement of what it must have been like? And can you put yourself in their place? And what I think happens with that, it reduces, like you said earlier, that defensiveness. It reduces that antagonistic, I'm not even listening to you. Now what I'm doing, I'm reloading. I'm ready for my point to come back so I can rebut, like you said, what you said, versus saying, you know, let me put everything down and just try and hold as best I can. That invitation on your part, I can't emphasize enough how important that is in these conversations, because there's nothing to prove. There's nothing to win. It's about understanding and kind of loving each other in a deeper way, almost loving each other the way I love myself. I want to love myself with a knowing, and I want to love you with a knowing. Right. I love your invitation in this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think it takes that. I mean, I think it really does take those conversations to move things forward. I think there are so many things that, you know, my wife and I talk about it often. Like, there are different worlds out here. And we say that in terms of like hobbies. So like, you know, she'll find a show that's around, you know, all about like kid gymnastics or something. Right. And in another sense, we'll find out, you know, this world of people who do theater for older adults or something. And it's based in like the Renaissance period. And we're like, oh, we didn't know that world even exists. There are worlds that we don't know that exist, but we will never understand them unless we sit and listen and take into the things that make up that world and the experiences that make up those worlds.
That's a really great analogy of how we do this all the time. Pick up a new hobby, pick up a new show, develop a deeper appreciation for someone else's abilities, let's say in the arts or athleticism or whatever it may be, right, academia, whatever. That is a wonderful analogy of how we can just simply carry this over to this whole idea about race, ethnicity, because we do it all the time without recognizing it in terms of expanding our appreciation for things. Why not do it in this area as well? Yeah, really, really good. I want to come back to this idea of being more racially aware. What are some of the character traits and these relational qualities that you hope that we can expand more and more in our families, in our communities, in our nation as a family? What are these relational qualities that we want to espouse within ourselves and then between ourselves in relationship with one another? What are you wanting to see?
So, I mean, I would say for me, unequivocally, empathy and compassion. The ability to understand someone else's experiences and situations and to be able to understand what that might feel like and to hear what that might feel like and what it does feel like. And then to be able to exhibit understanding through change behavior, right?
Yeah.
So it's one thing for me to say, I could put my hand on your shoulder and just say, you know, I understand this must be rough. But if I am recognizing some of the ways that I'm contributing to this and that doesn't change, then it falls flat, right? We're not able to grow relationally with that. And so if you talk about relationship and use the word family and those things, you know, families are so complex because everybody is a part of the same family, but everybody moves differently. Everybody has different emotions, different experiences, you know, as they go out and venture into the world, but we're able to still be a family and we're always able to connect and be there for one another when times get difficult. Families make decisions that, you know, people don't necessarily agree with, but there's still that connection and people still want to make sure that they're okay. And I feel like we can do that if we understand and take the time to step back and say, I don't understand this because I don't experience it. But that doesn't mean that I can't understand what it means to you, how this impacts you, what this means for your day-to-day life. And so I think if we can start to get to that point, because there's so much noise, but no one's listening. Like, so much is being said, but we're not willing to sit down and hear what people are saying. And so I think, you know, relationally, I think change behavior through empathy and compassion is unequivocally what we need to see for individuals to understand where some of their racist beliefs are and how we can begin to make impactful change.
It really is having those two as a cornerstone, isn't it? I think about kind of our developmental milestones, and this is a little bit of a tweak on Erickson's, but, you know, when we're born, our first developmental milestones about trust versus mistrust.
Right.
And we're talking about any relationship, you and me, anybody else we're around, it starts right there. And you're saying, come at it with empathy and compassion. Strive to understand and work to have an appreciation for, not to be right, just to appreciate. And then from there, we kind of begin to form an identity, don't we? In therapy, we talk about mutuality of autonomy, this idea that we can be two mutually autonomous people, but we can still be in relationship with one another, even in the identity as who we are as a family in a larger way. Each kind of grooving off of the differences that each person kind of exhibits and who they are and how they're created. And while you're going off in that direction, I'm going off in this direction, and we get to encourage one another. And then once the trust and safety is there, and then an identity begins to form, then we get to get busy. We get to become industrious. And that's when we really begin to kind of get into a gear and get a rhythm going and really complement each other and really contribute to life in a very, very unique way. So yeah, I like that. So we're talking about these traits, empathy and compassion. We're talking about an identity that can get formed around some of our differences and just appreciation. Let me ask kind of a funny question. How would one know if they're not racist?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting question. And I really think it starts with introspection and understanding where our belief systems are, and checking the biases that we have, because like you said, we all have biases, but does it show up in how you interact with people? Does it, you know, give an individual a power complex that they use to exploit and remain in power and to have that dominance? And, you know, with that, I think that being anti-racist is a lifelong process, because as new things happen, we have new experiences, and sometimes throughout our life, new biases form, new behaviors form. And so I think if we go down to road of like checking if I'm anti-racist, I think it's really, you know, understanding where those biases are, how they show up in practice, because we do have these biases, but are you using this for any type of advantage? Are you checking to, you know, using the power and the privilege that you have to advocate for individuals who don't have it? Or are you using it to transition yourself to a more powerful position?
I really like that. I want to come back to that maybe just a minute here. But being able to use those things that you have in your life that you're really fortunate to have. Mm-hmm. Before I get into that, though, you're talking about then how do I know? And you're advocating being able to hold both your experience plus someone else's experience in just a curious way. Being able to hold both, that takes a lot of energy. And that takes a lot of self-awareness in the moment, the way you're describing it. And that self-awareness of what's getting kicked up for me, and can I hold and bind that while I listen thoroughly to someone else? I mean, we talk about emotional intelligence, EQ. There's four steps to it, aren't there? One is, what gets kicked up for me? And what am I feeling and what am I needing? And can I manage those feelings and needs while I tap into, hey, what's coming up for you, and develop the empathy through the compassion that you're describing, and then finding a way to bring both of these together. So I do the within work, then I do the between work.
Sure.
That's the part here you're saying, if we can do this, this is where our racism begins to get managed and these things begin to kind of decrease. Really like that.
I absolutely believe that to be not racist means that you're anti-racist. Like, so you're absolutely working to use your privilege to dismantle things and to make sure individuals who don't have that experience do have more of a level playing field versus I'm not contributing to it, but at the same time, if I see it, I may not do anything about it. And I think we want to move to a point that we're empathetic enough that when we see it, we feel moved to address it, because we understand empathically that that may be bringing up feelings for the person who's the victim.
I think, Brandon, right there, you just nailed it. When we have that empathic attunement and then that empathic pull, that pull into that moment, that's when something shifted, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's right there. This is somebody who we could say is not racist, but is one human responding to another human, their brother, their sister, their family member. We've got an opportunity to address racism like you're encouraging us, by focusing within first and being personally responsible for our own prejudices and our own biases that can lead to individuals and then groups being discriminated against. A lot of times we may not even be aware of it. But what if we simply ask or acknowledge within ourselves this question that says, what if we all have the right to be seen and judged and treated fairly? What if we actually have individually and collectively an opportunity to focus on ensuring and advocating for and enforcing, protecting the rights we each inherently and divinely, unalienably have as humans, rights that are not capable of being taken away or denied? And in doing so, what if we work to be able and willing to create opportunities to help people reach their God-given design and potential out of a love for each other as one family? I believe this type of change is possible, and I believe it starts from doing the within work, that inner work that you're describing. I do want to emphasize, Brandon, you've got a really nice way about you, and we did a show recently on sex trafficking. And our second show, we refer to as Guys Talk. Mm-hmm. Basically, things that we as guys that can contribute to the sex industry. Yep. And it's easy in those times to villainize guys for promoting this. But a lot of times, guys going on and doing what they do, they're doing it innocently.
They're not thinking about that.
Yeah. That's it. So what we got to do in that show and what our speaker did in that show was to de-villainize the men doing these things and raised awareness that says, hey, that might be innocent for you, but it contributes to something larger that's heinous, that is really dark. And it was a really nice reframe from going to say, you know, men are the responsible ones or men are the bad ones, to could you be more responsible by becoming aware of what you're contributing to that you may not even know you're doing? What you're doing here is something very similar. Mm-hmm. It's not like all those racists suck and you guys, you know, you don't, you know, no, it's an invitation. And this is kind of you and your character. And I mean, necessarily what I'm saying. You're inviting a conversation that says, hey, can you take a look and see maybe what you might unknowingly be contributing here that could really be impactful? And what if we take responsibility for that? And it's not just to stop racism. It's not just to stop the sex trafficking. It's to grow as a person.
Right.
And then to watch what that growth does and rippling over into other people around us, having a chance to grow as well. So I love your message. I love your maturity and your voice. And I so appreciate your emphasis on that. It is a powerful message, my friend. You're doing an awesome job of it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's good work. And I do believe that we can get better at this if we take the time to have that introspection.
Yeah, so good. Hey, Brandon, just before we go, I want to see if you could refer us to any resources that would be helpful for our listeners to follow up with. And also, I know you got something like a new YouTube channel. I'd love to have people access that and learn about that there too. So give us some resources.
Of course. So the YouTube that you're referring to is the Black Mental Wellness Lounge. And so I started that a few months ago, really centered on Black mental health and some of the specific things like what we talked about today and how we can help individuals of African American descent really focus on their mental health, their wellness, and talk about issues and things that impact them. And to, you know, I have some guests on from time to time. And so anybody can check that out. If you go to YouTube and just search for the Black Mental Wellness Lounge, the page will come right up. I think right now we have maybe 12 videos up. I would love for people to check that out. I would also plug the Black Mental Health Alliance, which is based in Baltimore. I believe their website is blackmentalhealth.com. And so if you go there and go to their training sessions, they do have trainings on anti-racism. So they would be a great place to, they do national training. So I would recommend them. And then Psych Hub also has a resource on their page, and their website is psychhub.com. And they have some resources on anti-racism training and how to work better with the African-American community in terms of mental health. So I would plug those resources.
Wonderful. Hey, I appreciate those. Thanks for sharing those with us. Well, Brandon, thank you for being with us today. I look forward to the next time we get to come back together and just do what we do and have some fun together. So thank you again for being part of our show.
No problem. Thank you all for having me.
So nice. And for those listening in, thank you for joining us as well. And we'll look forward to having you with us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tried Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.